every now and then.
The artisans.
I hear fellas bragging on them women. And it makes me, how it makes me want to brag a little bit on my
exclusive collaboration.
I don't know where to start bragging on my woman because she's got so many good qualities.
Welcome to Between a Talk and a Hard Place, a podcast for women bringing you down-to-earth conversation about the realities of our real-life experiences. From situations to situationships, we'll be discussing the challenges women face but don't talk about enough as we navigate this thing called life. I'm your host, Lizette McKenzie.
So in our last discussion, we talked about domestic violence and the direct and indirect experiences we've had, seen or heard about. We talked about what domestic violence is, three myths surrounding domestic violence, and we covered red flags that may be present within a relationship that might be abusive. So for this episode, Alicia and I want to continue that discussion. And today we're going to be joined by Janet McKnight Frost. She's an entrepreneur and owner of Loxify by Janet. She's a United States Army veteran, and thank you, Janet, for your service. She's a wife, mother, author, and full-time student who's pursuing her master's in marriage, couple, and family counseling. And right before she throws her Shiro cape in the wash, she cooks, takes time to read, and she might craft her own next master's piece. Similar to me, this subject is one that is very near and dear to Janet, and she wanted to lend her voice to shed some light on domestic violence and talk about how it doesn't get enough attention. So I will pass the mic over to Janet so she can say hey, and we'll get this discussion started.
Yes, hello. Thank you for having me. And domestic violence is definitely a subject that does not get enough attention. Just a little bit of on the statistics. On average, nearly 20 people per minute are physically abused by a domestic partner. So basically within a year, this equates to 10 million women and men, you know, that could possibly be abused. You know, this is something that is very near and dear to my heart because I have been in many abusive relationships, unfortunately.
Right. You're not alone. I have too.
Yes. And, you know, sometimes when you're younger, it's as if you normalize the behavior. You know, right. Having seen it growing up, you think that this is something that's normal, and it's not.
Right.
You know, I would tell anyone that's in an abusive relationship at this moment, get help, get counseling, and possibly get out because it's not going to get better.
Right. Absolutely. And I agree with you. I think from seeing it so much, I don't know if it comes from, if it starts with shock and then it turns into deep-rooted disbelief. I think women who are in domestic violence relationships become desensitized to all the wrong that's going on. And it is something that I agree does not get enough attention. It's not taken lightly. And I'm guilty of having seen social media is like the gateway of all drugs. You see all types of videos, you see, you know, and I will admit that there were times where I would see videos where maybe a couple or a guy was arguing with a girl and the girl hits the guy hits it. And from my perspective, it was funny, but that was from the outside looking in, you know, social media made it look interesting. It was funny. It was something to laugh at, but these things are real.
Exactly.
People are getting hurt. Women and men are being abused, and it's not anything to laugh at.
It's true.
And I was in that situation. Like I said in the last episode, I was in that situation for many years. Mm-hmm. I was so desensitized to it. I didn't feel like it was abuse because I didn't feel like I was being allowing myself to be a victim because, you know, I was fighting back. So right. I wasn't just sitting there taking the hits. I was giving them back. But the fact of the matter is I should not have been in that situation where I felt like every single day I had to be prepared to defend myself.
Yeah, and I think this is kind of part of a larger cultural issue where we're exposed to violence at such a young age that it just becomes, unfortunately, something that we're all desensitized to. Mm-hmm. Like, you can watch, say, even Looney Tunes as a yeah. kid, and you're like, oh, this is totally normal, like, yes. You're supposed to chase after someone with a mallet or hunt them with a gun because right. it is presented in a comedic light. It is presented in a lighthearted way. And then also, again, like I mentioned in the last episode, your parents tell you that if a little boy hits you, it's because he likes you. Right. So it's something that you become normalized to at a very early age instead of parents taking the time to kind of sit down and go through it with you.
Yes.
And then also I think the issue is now with social media and so many other platforms available, it's harder, I believe, for parents to kind of keep an eye on these type of things and say, hey, you might have seen this and someone said it was funny, but it's really not. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely something that is unfortunately widespread, and as more violence happens and, you know, we hear it on the morning news, it is desensitized. Oh, someone got shot today. Oh, someone got hit today. What else is new? Because no one is shocked anymore, unfortunately.
That's right. And victim blaming is at an all-time high.
Definitely.
Even when I was in that situation, I would victim blame because, again, I didn't see myself as being a victim. Mm-hmm. And ironic as it would sound, I would hear somebody getting hit by their spouse or significant other. And I would say, well, why was she even put up with that? Not mm-hmm. even connecting the dots to the fact that
right.
I was putting up with that.
Exactly.
You know, I was so blinded mm-hmm. to the belief that my life was normal, that it was okay, because I fought back. But in essence, I was a victim just like she was a victim, and I was wrong for blaming her for not being sensitive to her situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that that's what a lot of women and men continue to do. You know, they look at other people's relationships, and their relationship may be an abusive one, but they may say, oh, well, mine's not like that, so I'm okay. You know, we're okay.
Right, yes.
Yes.
You know, it's not that bad, but we're making excuses.
Right. And there's no such thing as a perfect relationship, but there should not have to be a violent relationship. People need to learn how to communicate. And that carries off into just cordial friendships. That carries off to the playground.
Right.
You
right.
shouldn't have to hit to communicate, to get your point across. You shouldn't have to put your hands on other people to get them to either listen to you or try to get them to understand what you're saying.
That's
and
right.
I think there's become this stigma where dominance rules, and the best way to dominate anybody is to bring them pain. To you know, to beat them down, to bring them down, so that you can stand, you know, stand tall over them.
Right.
Right.
That's true.
Sexual abuse is something else that I've been hearing a lot about it in the news. I read an article. It was about a 14-year-old girl who went to a party and she became intoxicated. And there were, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, five men, I don't know if they were older, you know, they were older than her. I don't know how
old. Right.
And they went to court, and the judge ruled that because she was intoxicated, she was not capable of fighting them off. So the judge did not charge them with, I think it was sexual assault. I think because they said that she was intoxicated and was not capable of fighting. She was passed out.
Right.
And in relationships, that to hear a ruling like that, to hear a ruling like that, it hurts, because that's saying I don't have any protection over my body. Granted, no, she shouldn't have been drinking, but that's not the point. We all do things that we should not do. But
yes.
Your body should be your body. That doesn't give someone the right to take over it and do what they want with it, when they want, and then there's no repercussions to it.
Right.
And I also, go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's happening more and more. There's excuses, and excuses are being made. And it's more, we hear more about it with men. Victimizing women in that way, but I'm sure there are women who do the same thing. And either way, man or woman, your body, you shouldn't have to be fearful that your body is going to be violated and no one is going to stick up for you. Right. And that's what's going on. And I think now, in the climate that we're in, it's looking like it's more and more, it's okay if I do this, because otherwise, in everyday life, I'm still a good person. So they're going to see me as this good person. So I can take control of your body and do what I want to your body, make you feel bad, and my life will still be okay.
Right. I also recently read the memoir of the victim in the Brock Turner case. I'm sure y'all have heard about it. The Stanford swimmer who was convicted of assault. Her name is Chanel Miller. And what happened was a lot different than the way it was portrayed in the media. I just happened to think that they already knew each other and he crossed the line, but that wasn't the case at all. She happened to attend a party at Stanford with her sister and another friend. She got drunk, and the next thing she knew, she woke up in the hospital, and there are a team of nurses and counselors telling her she'd been assaulted. And meanwhile, she didn't know where her sister was. Clothes weren't on her anymore. And it turns out that this guy, Brock Turner, decided that, well, she's drunk, but looks like she's still into me. So he took her outside and between two dumpsters and sexually assaulted her. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, in her case, there were two young men on bicycles going by who happened to stop everything. But either way, it should have never happened. And to your point, let's say the case went to trial, and she was saying how she essentially had to come across as this perfect victim. She couldn't be seen as too sexual or too much of a lush. She had to be seen as the quote-unquote good girl. But in the meantime, the lingering question is, why should she have to be seen in a certain type of way in the first place? She didn't ask for this. Again, she didn't. She might have needed to reconsider drinking or whatnot, but that's still no reason for, you know, that to have happened. And I do feel like with sexual assault and the whole conversation with consent, it does become hard to emphasize to people that no matter what state the person is in, if you don't hear a yes or I'm okay with this or let's go with this, then that automatically means things need to stop. And the story and the discussion, you know, like, oh, you wanted it. Oh, you were teasing me the whole night. No.
Agreed.
Someone says no, that means no. But again, in our culture, it has always been the mindset to blame the victim. The victim was dressed a certain way. The victim has a reputation. It doesn't matter. No one's body is anyone else's property. It belongs to them and them alone.
Absolutely.
And once, I think we have a better understanding of that and how we can communicate that better to future generations. I don't think things will change, and that is kind of a scary notion to consider, but it is reality.
Yeah, and in intimate partner relationships and marriages, it almost seems like, because they will tell you, I have heard mixed messages. If a husband wants to have sex and his wife does not, he has a right to go ahead and have sex with her as well. I completely disagree with that.
Yeah.
I completely disagree, but they will put up an argument because they see that as him being your husband, or, you know, that's your wife. You should be able to do that. No, you should not. If I don't want to have sex with my husband, we're not having sex.
Exactly.
I shouldn't be forced to give you my body. Mm-hmm. Yes, you've had it before, but if I'm saying no, that should be what it is.
Right. Exactly.
Why does your desire take over my will? Mm-hmm. And it's a sad situation.
It is.
A lot of abuse, domestic violence comes with sexual abuse, that mm-hmm. men dominate in that way. And they make women feel like you have to do this. You know, they'll either play on their emotions or they'll take it forcefully. And it's something that a lot of women, a lot of wives who are in that position, they may eventually talk about the physical abuse, but they might still be too embarrassed to say, and he sexually abused me, because to society, that doesn't sound right, because you're this union, you're this couple. How can your husband sexually abuse you? And it does happen.
Right.
Yeah, it sure does.
I think the other thing at play would be the fact that for so long, wives have been told to submit to their husbands, and that goes all the way back to the Bible.
Yeah.
So in that case, I think a lot of people use that as justification for men getting their way, because they made this covenant, particularly in front of God, which means the man has the final say in everything. The woman's opinion or feelings really is inconsequential. She married him, she has to do what he says. Mm-hmm. And really, I think that is where some trouble starts. I won't say all, because increasingly people are either non-religious or atheistic or whatnot, so we can't point it all to that, but it is something so ingrained into the root of society that it is hard for people to see that. No, just because a woman is married to a man does not mean the man has infinite rights to her body. Mm-hmm. There are plenty of situations where someone cannot desire intimacy with their partner. And right. It, a lot of times it has nothing to do with the partner. It has more to do with them.
I mean, right.
But again, it's something that is kind of at its core hard to dismantle, because it is such a biblical belief that people don't possibly want to reconsider that, hey, we need to reanalyze what these words submit mean. So.
Right. Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. Women need to, in my opinion, and from my personal experience, I had to figure out when it was time for me to get out of that relationship. I had to make that decision. It didn't matter. There were people who had their, you know, their idea of what was going on. There were people who had seen it, and they could offer as much advice as they wanted. And the advice was great advice, but the ultimate decision came down to me and what I was going to do. And for years, I ignored every bit of good, great, awesome advice, and I stayed in that relationship. Janet, what advice or commentary would you apply to getting out of an abusive relationship?
I would say don't ignore any signs. If you feel that you're in danger, just as you were saying, you know, you knew what point to get out. For me, I know when it was time for me to get out, because on the one particular occasion, that night, I knew that if I didn't leave, it would mean my life and then possibly my children's lives. I would have to say, again, you know, don't ignore those signs. If you feel that you are in danger, and if someone has been, constantly threatening you leading up to a certain point, you definitely need to get out. You need to go ahead and seek out as many resources as you can. Try your best to get to a shelter as soon as possible. You know, sometimes when you're in abusive relationships, it's difficult to leave the situation. So you have to have different plans in place. Have your bags packed. Have a code word. Use something with a friend or someone that knows your situation. Definitely leave that situation as soon as possible.
Agreed. I think a lot of people misunderstand the different levels of abusive situations. There are some situations where women have the means to leave. They may be in an abusive situation and not have any children. They can be gainfully employed. They can have their own stuff, their own things, their own home, their own car. There's women who have children, have no job. Mm-hmm. Have no family, have no place to go. And then there's women who they're just existing. They don't even know who they are in the world of their partner or their spouse. Without that spouse, without that other person, they feel like they would be no one. They're absolutely no one. The level of abuse, when a woman decides that she wants to leave, people on the outside don't, and even the people who are being abused, don't really recognize or understand the capabilities of the abuser. Some women are afraid to leave because they think, oh, he might kill me. He might try to kill me. Mm-hmm. I, for one, just because I'm always, my personality is just go ahead and do it anyway, you know, just leave, because if you stay, he's killing you anyway. He's slowly killing you anyway. Right. But there is that fear of, if I leave, it's going to enrage him that much more. And then I have to worry about my kids. I have to worry about my other family members. They don't want to feel responsible for endangering any other people other than what they've already done. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't realize, they're like, oh, she's sick, she's crazy, why did she stay? That fear is real. That's a strong emotion.
It is.
And it's unfair to judge someone else's weakness because it's not yours. Just because you wouldn't stay in that particular situation doesn't mean there's not an area where you're at your weakest, mm-hmm. and you can't move your feet, that person who can't get out of that domestic violence, you know, that situation, that could be their strong suit. So it's not fair for you to judge someone else's weakness just because it's not similar to yours. Mm-hmm. And I think that goes on much more than it should, but people really just don't realize the severity of the fear that gets instilled into someone.
It's true.
How old were your children, Janet?
Actually, they were 6 and 7 at that time.
They were little. And
yes, they were very little. And ironically, I was still a soldier at that time. I had followed, you know, all the proper steps to get, protection orders in place. And, you know, I thought at the time that things were going to get better. This was right after I had it lifted. I had the protection order lifted. Soon as he got back home, it was the same cycle all over again. But that one night, it just drove me over the edge, because he was, you know, going after me. The kids were there. and I had to hurry up and get out. And mm-hmm. knew that I was leaving, he flattened all of my tires.
Oh, wow.
I ran to a neighbor's house, beat on the door, made sure my kids were inside. And the neighbor called the police and everything. It was just...
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Wow. I'm glad you were able to get out of that.
Yeah.
I'm glad you were able to get out of that. It's scary. My two older kids, just about their whole childhood was a part of my abusive relationship. And I will forever feel bad for allowing them to have to endure that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I always say the scars you can't see are probably the worst. I have my own scars. I've had stitches, I've had black eyes, I've had, broken bones, I've had all of these things. Mm-hmm. But I think about what I put my kids through.
Mm-hmm.
To them, he was a great person. To me, he was not. So they had to kind of balance who they thought, who was that good parent. And sometimes they had to choose.
Right.
Yeah.
And I was, because of the situation, I was not always that nice parent. I was mm-hmm. always angry, mean. I didn't want to spend time with anyone. I wanted to be by myself. And I had kids. So how can I say, I don't want to be bothered with anyone. I don't want to spend time with you. I don't want to talk to you. That's exactly what I did. I didn't talk to my kids. I would feed them,
mm-hmm.
But there was no quality time being spent because I just wanted to be alone in the dark or, just in my own head. And I didn't want to have time for them. And because I was that person, he picked that slack up. He was that person. He was the one that spent that quality time. He built himself up in their eyes to be this great dad. And he was awesome to them.
Right.
I can't lie and say he wasn't. They loved him. He was awesome to them. But he treated me like crap.
Wow.
And it got to the point where they would look in my eyes. They would look at me like, I'm the reason
mm-hmm.
he was treating me like crap. Like, Mom, because you're always being mean. You're always angry. That's why he's like that. And from a kid's point of view, that's the way it looks.
Right.
So that was a hard time. And I think I will forever and a day be remorseful that I allowed it to go on so long. My youngest daughter, she's 15 now. In my book, I talk about it. I said she was the first person to move out at, how old was she? She was little. I came home and she still had her little clothes. I had her crib and most of her stuff was gone out the crib. She moved down. I lived upstairs from my mother and I came home and homegirl had her clothes and she was out. She's the youngest person to successfully move out and make it. Like, she was not coming back. Wow. She did not. She didn't want to be bothered. And to this day, she doesn't like loud noise. She's very sensitive. She doesn't want you yelling at her.
Right.
Even though sometimes she could be loud. But she's not confrontational.
Okay.
And so she didn't have to deal with any of that, because the first signs of that, little by little, her little clothes was gone. I don't know what she carried her stuff out in, but I came home one day. I'm like, where is her clothes? And she had it all in my mother's house. She was not playing.
Wow.
She was not playing. So she was a lot smarter than I was. But for my older two, I do feel bad that I exposed them mm-hmm. to those unpleasantries in life. And I only pray that when they, they're old enough to have their own relationships, and they do have their own relationships, I'm just hoping that it doesn't mimic what they grew up in.
Exactly.
Right.
Because I think I would be that crazy parent as much as I don't even know what I would do. I don't even know what they're old enough. They need to know how to take care of their own personal issues. But I think when it comes to that, I honestly don't know how I would react.
Right.
I think I'm pretty close with both my parents, and fortunately I have not been in a violent situation, but I think my parents know me to the point where if anything is different from a certain pattern or a certain way that I act, they immediately know something's off. Like they can, like my mom will say sometimes when I call, she's like, "Are you sick? Your voice doesn't sound right." And I think a lot of times that there is this connection between parents and children that is almost unspoken. Mm-hmm. Like I can be thinking something about one of my parents, and then the next time I say it, and we just kind of share a moment. And right. I think in those cases, and in a lot of situations, kids kind of can have this insight into what needs to happen and what needs to not happen. Because I remember sometimes as a kid, I would know exactly what to tell my parents so they wouldn't go off the edge. So, for instance, my mom seems like a very sweet person on the outside, and she is. But anytime someone would mess with me or touch me or something like that at school, she would go hot in a minute. So I got to the point where I wouldn't tell her certain things. And looking back, they weren't things that were going to put me in imminent danger, but they were things that I should have felt more like being upfront about. So right. When I, you know, now when I tell her things that happened as a kid that I didn't tell her about, she's like, "Why didn't you tell me?" It's like, well, if I told you, you might be in jail now. So I didn't want that to happen. I needed you around.
Your but mom is out right now looking for your third grade principal. You done did it now, Alicia.
Exactly. But I think in a lot of ways there is this bond between parents and children where parents just know something's going on. And I think the hardest thing for parents is to see a situation like domestic violence going on and not be able to say, "You need to leave. I can help you." Because like you said, Lisette, you had to make that decision to leave. And as the saying goes, you can lead a horse to water, but you mm-hmm. can't make them drink. Mm-hmm. And in a lot of cases, that's what happens, because with domestic violence, yes, a lot of it is physical and sexual, as we've talked about, but the core of it is psychological. It begins mm-hmm. by diminishing your thinking. So a lot of the things that were instilled in you as a child, and a potential abuser can see those things and pick out your weak points and prey on them.
Yep.
And it'll be to the point where you don't trust yourself, you don't believe in what your core values are anymore, and it just becomes to that point where you're no longer who you were raised to be. And again, parents can sense that, and they want to do something, but a lot of times you can't do anything because it has to be that child's decision. So, you know, speaking as a kid, I would say it's hard to not jump on everything that happens to your kid, but sometimes it's necessary. Like my mom does say, sometimes you have to learn the hard way, but unfortunately with domestic violence, learning the hard way can sometimes mean the loss of life. So it is good that you ladies were able to leave your situation, and you know, with the hope of building better futures for yourselves and your children. But again, it's not easy. It's not one size fits all. It's not this one way how it should be. It's different on every person and every circumstance.
Absolutely. Absolutely. My goodness. That just makes me think of all the time. And it's hard because you think about all the time that you spent when you've been in that situation. You think about all the time that you spent being conniving, because ultimately and sneaky, because that's what we turn into. We turn into these conniving, sneaky people to survive. You start, you lie, you know, you lie too. And they start off with little lies because you don't want to let all your business out. You don't want to let people know. And then one lie turns into a bigger lie, turns into a bigger lie. And before you know it, you're like in stealth mode doing all your contortionists. You're bending over backwards to cover up so many things that, you know, it just becomes a way of life.
Mm.
And it's sad. It's a sad way to live when the world is so huge. And I don't know what it is about any one particular person that can make someone say, there's no one else out there that I could be with. And I'm saying that as somebody who was in that situation, because even right. in that situation, I envisioned myself being with other people. Oh my God, you don't know. Y'all don't know how many celebrities I was with in my head. Like, it was going down. It was going down. Yet my reality was in the garbage. My reality was in the garbage. That is how warped my mind was. Mm-hmm. I could pretend that everything was great. I could pretend that it was going to be better. But my reality was that until I fully decided that I wanted it to be great and I wanted it to be better, it didn't matter how much pretending I did, right. I was in the garbage.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But oh, those celebrities, I'm telling you. And I think ultimately you can't make a decision. It doesn't matter what you say. If you know someone who you even suspect is in that situation, you can't make them up and leave. You can, mm-hmm. in your own way, offer assistance to the extent that you feel safe to do so. Right. You can let them know that you're there for them in a way that you feel safe to do so, because that, even that can turn into a big deal. I've seen people offer assistance and it backfire on them. They lost mm-hmm. friendships altogether just because they were trying to save a friend.
Exactly.
But, you know, you care about who you care about. You care about your friends.
Right.
You can be there for them, not to the extent where it takes over your life,
right.
but just let them know, I'm here for you. They have to ultimately make the decision to grab onto that olive branch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in that case, I would kind of liken it to someone who struggles with substance abuse. I think it's that same mindset, like you were saying, was that you would fantasize about being with celebrities or whatnot, but in reality, you were this person who was hurting you. And I think in similar situations, that's what happens with people who abuse substances. I have seen up close what substance abuse can do. I have family members who've been through it and are still going through it. And I think in a lot of cases, they see themselves as who they are sober. They see themselves interacting with the rest of the world mm-hmm. like most of us do. But something in their mind tells them they need that drug. They need this one thing to get through life when it's not true. But again, you can't go up to someone struggling with substance abuse saying, hey, you need to stop that mm-hmm. cocaine. Hey, you need to stop that heroin. No, it has to be something coming
from them.
From them, deep inside, that they've had this resolve to go and get help and to heal themselves and to see themselves as that version that they've imagined for so long.
Right.
But again, it has to be a decision they make. You can't make it for them. You can be there, but you can't make it for them. And I think that's a lot of times where the misunderstanding comes from, because I think a lot of times, a lot of us want to save our friends, save our family, but we can't. We can be there. We can be their support system, but we can't fight their fight for them.
Agreed. That was a great example.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I didn't even think of it that way.
No, neither did I.
Look at you, Alicia, dropping gems, scalp girl.
Thank you.
But I mean, the big takeaway is people are going to do what they want to do.
Right.
I would like to hope that women begin to look at themselves as more than just someone's object. I hope they see themselves as more than just being somebody's boo. Give themselves value, because once you start valuing yourself, you will not feel comfortable. You won't find comfort in accepting value, a lower value that someone wants to place on you. And I think that's something that over the years has totally been tossed out the window. A lot of women feel like they have to be someone other than themselves just to be liked, when in reality you can be yourself and the right person will like you.
Exactly.
That's my hope. That's why I like to talk about empowering women. I had one gentleman on my Instagram page. He was kind enough to make a comment. He said, "Why is everything sis, sister, girl? What about the men?" And my response to him, and at first I was angry, I almost took it back to the Bronx where I grew up, like, who are you talking to? But I had to sit back and say, wait a minute, this is my professional page. Let me put on my professional voice. Right. And I had to think about what he was saying. And I could understand where he's coming from, because if you look at a page and all you see is this inspiration for women, meanwhile, you're feeling crappy, you might feel a certain kind of way. So what I said to him was, I can't be the man. I can't teach you to be the man that you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
If you feel that something is missing, why don't you go to the men in your community and talk to them about how you can be the change you want to see?
Right.
Mm-hmm. I can only be the change that I want to see to the women who are willing to listen to me. I can't be who you want me to be to make you who you want to be.
Exactly.
And he never responded.
I was going to say.
I was kind of glad, because I don't think I really had any more in me. I was kind of glad, but I kind of understood. And I think people are looking for other people to save them and to change them. But the reality is, you have to want that. If all you see is sister, sis, girl, that means you're looking in the wrong place. Why are you looking in the place where all the sisters and girls are hanging out at? Why don't you go to where because there's a lot of men who are empowered and who are about good things. Mm-hmm. So if you're not finding what it is you're looking for, that should tell you that you're looking in the wrong place.
Yeah.
So I will forever remember that kind fellow. I hope he is well. But he almost jetted me out of North Carolina to the Bronx.
Back to the Bronx.
So he could get checked really quick. But, I thought about it, and I kind of understood where he was coming from. And I hope that at some point he does, if that's really what he needed and he wasn't just being a true jerk, that he does find that connection where he can start being, connecting with men who can provide that change that he needs to see.
Right.
However, I did look at his page because I'm nosy, and when you have the big booty girls and all of them, when you have all these little things posted, you can't come on somebody else's page and say you're looking for empowerment. Unfortunately, I'm not one of those big booty girls. I have an extended back. I can't empower you the way you want to be empowered. So you definitely came to the wrong page. I'm sorry, sir. But I will forever remember him.
Oh, gosh.
But this conversation was great. I'm so thankful to you both for taking a moment and wrapping up. This should have happened before now, but because I had my surgery, wasn't able to talk. So this wrapped up the October being Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And Janet, I hope that you want to come back on and we have other discussions maybe not so heavy, because domestic violence is a heavy topic, but ultimately just things in general that we go through every single day. So I thank you both for coming on with me today. I do appreciate you.
Thank you very much.
And I'll put, Janet, I'll put your links, I'll put links to your Instagram page. Okay. As a matter of fact, before we go, let's talk about Loxify by Janet. Let us talk about that. What's going on?
Well, Loxify by Janet is basically going to be an online beauty supply. I started out Loxify with just making lock extensions, you know, for those people that are having difficulty locking their hair or just need lock replacements. It's just a quick way to lock your hair. And I just happen to hand make them.
Awesome. And they look nice. I do like them. I don't know if I'd be able to, I could pull it off. I know I can, but I'm so like, I feel one way today, like I want my hair one way, and then tomorrow it has to be some way else. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if I would commit, but they look beautiful. And I'm going to put the link to your Instagram, to your page down so people could check you out.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you guys so much. That will conclude this session of Between a Talk and a Hard Place.